Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin, brought to you by Whataburger, family owned and operated since 1950. Boys, shout out Whataburger, shout out our sponsor for this program, Whataburger Corporate, if you're listening. We are big fans. We would love to do business with you. Also, shout out Heinz Tomato Ketchup. 57 varieties established 1869. Boys, we have nice. We have lots to talk about today on the program. We've put a hard day of writing in, slaving away here at the condo. Beautiful seaside, Destin, Florida, home of the Destin Seafood Festival, which is a lovely event.
Or at least the former home of. We're not sure that it extended much beyond 1992.
That's the thing. I'm familiar with it up to 92, but beyond that, it gets a little murky. But boys, we've had a lot of fun together. We've written a lot of words. And now it's time to do really our bread and butter, which is making radio. And Whataburger, Heinz have made that possible. Piper, we have one other sponsor for today. Who are they?
They are Dwell Bible App.
Heard of them.
Our long-standing,
I feel like I've heard of them.
A long-standing partner in money-making and in Bible listening. Dwell is an audio Bible app that you can get. They have everything you need for your Bible listening, preferences, needs, life structure. It's a great way to get the Bible into the margins of your life where you wouldn't otherwise be able to read Scripture. So listening plans, they have all sorts of different features to help you. You can even listen to it while you're falling asleep. They have a sleep feature, so you can, you know, turn on the first nine chapters of First Chronicles, listen to so-and-so begat so-and-so. It'll put you right to sleep, and then it'll cut off for you. Go to dwellapp.io/happyrant to check out their offerings for our listeners. It is 10% off of their annual subscription and 33% off of their lifetime subscription. That comes out to under $100, so you spend $99, and you get it henceforth and forever, and as they continue to add different features, different readers, different music, all that, you'll continue to get all that. So again, dwellapp.io/happyrant. Check that out.
I love it. Wonderful work, Piper.
Great work.
And
as always.
Piper, I want to know if you've noticed something during this retreat, and it's that we're getting a little bit different version of Ronald than we normally get on the air. He's relaxed. He's expansive. He's unfiltered.
A little bit inebriated.
Yeah, yeah. He's getting a little crazy. And
inebriated. Like, Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
Water and LaCroix.
I thought it was creamer in your coffee. Not entirely sure.
For example, last night we had a little group activity after the workday was over. We all clocked out. We watched Any Given Sunday.
Oh.
An Oliver Stone classic.
Oh.
1999. We watched all 6.5 hours of it.
I'm going to tell you, I lost track of time. I would have pegged it at more like 72 hours. Mm-hmm. That is the longest sports movie I have ever seen.
It was a lot. It was a slog. But it's a slog that we enjoy, baby. It's part of the the shared culture of you.
Part of the milieu.
Part of the milieu of you and me. Part of the delightful, you know, just
I felt like I learned more about you two from watching that movie than I did like anything about the movie. Just because there are references that have been occurring for approximately 6 years that I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about. There's Ted's little, like, just weird celebration, like, touchdown celebration mid-podcast. I'm like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
Oh,
now you know.
It's the shark. Yes. Yeah. It's the shark from that. Okay.
It's the shark move. Dance. The shark the dance. Move. The move.
We call it the move.
Does move.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else did you learn about us, Piper, viewing Any Given Sunday? Let's talk about us.
So I also learned that you guys have a way of, so first of all, you guys both like rewatching movies a lot more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like rewatching movies as far as I could tell you. Maybe it's just that particular one.
Yeah, I don't rewatch movies,
but
this is different though, because this is our thing.
This is, so there's something group unique
activity
going on here.
Yeah.
But you also do this thing where you're like, oh, it's this scene. Like, you get, it's the anticipation of scenes, which you then sort of quote and talk through pre-scene, which coming to this movie for the first time created a unique viewing environment because I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And we get to the scene and I'm like, oh, it's kind of like what
it's verbatim.
Like what you, it's kind of like what
verbatim
you just described.
What you guys just laid out word for word.
But then Ronnie just picks two or three lines from the movie and would just randomly say them. Four or five times.
Willie Beam it.
That's one of them. This team's coming apart, I believe, is one of them.
This team's coming apart.
Yeah, that one. Okay, there we go. So that happened, I don't know, half a dozen times throughout the movie. Just like every, I mean, it was 6 hours long, so I guess it's once an hour.
It's just a light commentary.
Yeah, so the kind of the patter of commentary throughout was really, I don't know if it added or subtracted because
it probably subtracted.
Well, here's the thing: how do you subtract from a movie that is just
already terrible,
an utter smorgasbord of trash?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah,
can I go a couple minutes and interview you on the film, Piper?
Yes.
Because you're new to it. Ronald and I would like to know what were your favorite scenes? Favorite one or two scenes that kind of stick out?
The entirety of Ben-Hur.
The entire Ben-Hur kind of motif throughout. My favorite scene was a different movie.
It wasn't that they cut in Ben-Hur. It's that you saw it was literally like subliminal Ben-Hur throughout, I'm pretty sure. Which also coincided with me sharing a small vignette of walking into a gay bar in California.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
It was called Burger Mary's, and they were playing Ben-Hur on every TV screen in there. So there was a lot of experiences happening simultaneously. Let's see, other favorite scenes. Every Al Pacino speech, you know, like
which there were roughly 37.
of them, because you watch football movies for the coach speeches.
That's
true.
Those
are the high point of every single football movie, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
You know? And so the every inch?
Die for that inch.
Like that speech. Here's the thing. I'd seen that speech 25 times without ever seeing the movie because it's just kind of epic.
I'm going to die for that inch. Yeah. Oh, I like it, baby. I like it.
Let's see. Other good scenes.
Well, since there were approximately 26,000 snapshots per scene.
That's true.
The most disorienting.
I've never gotten, like carsick just watching a movie on a 35-year-old television from half the room away, but I did.
Yeah, listeners do need to know we watched this on a 27-inch tube television. It's square, and it is not high definition. And it was nostalgic, and it felt just right for this movie.
Totally.
But also, it's exactly the same kind of television they had on, like, the metal rack up in the corner of our dorm lobby or lounge when I was in college.
It's the exact kind of TV that would have been in production when the movie was released.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, there was a certain appropriateness there, but it added to the disorientation because when they cut scenes, like, it's like fuzzy on top of fuzzy. Like, just what is happening here? There's like plane flyovers and silhouettes of cheerleaders and like, Have you guys have seen Fight Club?
Yeah.
You know how he like cuts in?
Yeah.
Like he splices inappropriate things. What is it like into films to kind of? I feel like there was definitely some of that going on in this movie, and I just didn't notice because everything was just constantly. It felt all spliced.
Yeah.
I could have just called that movie like Football Splice.
It was. Yeah. I mean, it was. There's not a lot of, I'm sure there was a rhyme and a reason to all of it, but it was like sensory overload is what that movie is.
Baby, favorite scene for you? I got two.
Oh, man. Man, I love it when Jamie Foxx is eating the jambalaya at Pacino's house.
Oh, that's a great scene. Yeah.
And he's just basically.
Ben-Hur playing on the flat
screens.
That's
when Ben-Hur is playing, and he's basically just saying, look, man, none of it's turned out right for me, and now you're trying to do me over, and I'm not having it. I'm getting my dollars up.
Yes.
And when I finish this season, I'm going to be worth 10 times as much as I was.
Baby, we need to get our dollars up as a podcast. Let's be about that.
Well, I mean,
I mean, Whataburger, Heinz.
Yeah,
I
mean, you know. We're there.
So aside from all the splicing, who's your least favorite character in that movie?
Least favorite character in the movie? That's a fascinating question.
Well, I mean, probably some of the characters you're supposed to dislike. Like I don't like Cameron Diaz, but you're supposed to not like her, you know.
Dennis Quaid is the worst.
Yeah, you, I know. You just don't like Quaid.
I don't
yeah.
like his face, for yeah. one thing. Like, anytime he shows up on screen in any movie,
I don't. He looks like the Joker? I know, I get
he,
it.
Yeah. Every time he grins, I feel he looks predatory.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
And second of all, I didn't like his character. I didn't yeah. know if I was supposed to like or dislike his character.
Like, you're supposed to like his character.
But I didn't. Yeah.
You're he supposed seemed, to like Cap.
Yeah.
He, here's the thing, like... So, for those who haven't seen the movie, there's no spoiler alerts. This thing's been out for 23 years or whatever. He's the starting quarterback who's at the on kind of on his last legs, has won championships, gets yeah. injured and trying to come back. He just seemed like a whiny baby. I'm going to be honest. He was yeah. he was a I was just like, go away. If you're like play football or shut up.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
but stop this.
Yeah.
And his wife was like the second worst.
Yeah, she was. The worst. Yeah, she was.
Although you're not supposed to like her.
Right, correct.
Baby, I love the scene in the Schwitz with Shark LaVey and Willie Beeman.
Mm.
And Shark LaVey, who up until that point has
that's
done nothing
that's
but
Lawrence
like,
Taylor.
Yeah, Lawrence Taylor's character.
Not known for his eloquence in real life or this movie, actually.
Was he an actual football player?
Yeah.
Baby.
No, I just don't know.
Arguably the greatest defensive player to ever live.
Man. This guy, the guy
yeah,
that
Lawrence
was,
Taylor, yes. the guy that played Shark LaVey, was unblockable for about a decade.
Lawrence
and a half.
Taylor okay. redefined how pass rush worked in the NFL.
Guys, yeah. I could list off like 10 people right now where I could look at you and go, really, guys? I mean, if you don't know it, you don't know it.
Yeah, but we got there yeah. first.
You don't know it, you don't know
Do you want to do one just to like even things no, up and make us feel bad in that
just
one?
I don't care. Yeah. You can't know what you don't know, but carry on.
No, I want you to do one. Just give us one name.
Make us feel bad.
Make us feel bad.
I want to feel bad.
Absolutely.
I want to empathize with you when you're feeling bad.
We're reform yes. guys. We love feeling bad.
That's right.
Yeah.
Self-flagellation is our jam. Come on.
Okay. Philip Oakey.
Jeanette's husband.
Jeanette's husband. Kind of stays out of the limelight. Yeah. Wants to.
That's Oak.
Yeah.
That's Oak, Barnabas.
I mean, I don't know. It's spelled O-K-E. It's a fake word, so.
Baby, my other favorite scene is when Pacino's like dances with the old lady a little bit.
Oh yeah,
I feel like that's peak Pacino.
Yeah, it is.
Even though this movie was garbage, I feel like Pacino really dialed it up, and it like showcased a lot of things that he does well, which is being like broken down and hollowed out by life, but still kind of going for it. I don't know.
Yeah,
I loved him in
yeah,
this.
If this movie had I don't know any editing at all.
That's right.
It could
even
have been,
a cursory edit.
It could have been an entirely palatable football movie.
It could have been.
Like the football parts of it were like they were way over the top, which is fine. Okay, it's an over the top football movie.
Yeah.
The coach speeches were spectacular. Great cameos, Jim Brown and different people working.
Yeah, I
there.
Like Jimbo.
He was good.
He was
great.
Very good.
You know, like the grizzled assistant coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of that was great, and even the football scenes were not bad.
No, they were good.
Like, sometimes you like they have quarterbacks who can't throw and stuff. They
right.
managed to find guys who like.
Yeah, they used all real football players.
They run and throw and catch like football players, which was
sure.
nice.
Mm.
But then you get everything like the endless montages of stuff that doesn't have anything to do with the movie is like, well, that was unnecessary.
Yeah.
Boy, speaking of over the top,
welcome to Happy Rant Sports.
I want to talk about
Happy Rant movie critics.
I want to talk about another over-the-top entertainment vehicle that we don't always understand, and that's nerd Twitter.
We don't often understand.
Piper, we sat over here in the studio this morning. Ronald was laid out on the couch ranting about nerd Twitter and his place vis-a-vis nerd Twitter.
He seemed to be struggling to find his place in that world, I'll be honest.
Yeah. So, baby, finish your text.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to interrupt you.
It's an important one. Sorry.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, keep going.
He's nerd tweeting.
I'm hearing every word you're saying right now.
He's 100%.
Baby, who we texting? Starkey, Cosby.
It's a church thing.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. No big.
No problem.
Just got a transfer something. Here.
Take your time.
Piper,
are you familiar with the world of nerd Twitter?
Man, I worked in academic publishing for about 4 years, so I'm deeply aware of it.
Deeply aware.
Yeah.
More aware of it than I am.
Yeah, like uncomfortably aware to the point that I've had to distance myself. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you could, just in a couple of sentences, describe like what nerd Twitter is, who it serves, and the exactly. And the role that it plays in your life.
So we're talking theological nerd Twitter, just to clarify. There's lots of different kinds of nerds. Nothing wrong with being a nerd. Nerds run the world, except for theologians. They don't run the world. Nerd Twitter is a small collection of theological wonks who tweet really to, like, they tweet to the public, but it's really, like, they know the 6 to 18 people they're tweeting at.
Yeah.
About incomprehensible mm-hmm. minutiae of theology. And then it turns into...
Milieu.
Throw that in there. Yeah.
Good.
then it turns into them replying to one another and well-actioning one another. And, well, have you read this original source? And what about this one in the German? And and then, like, they're piling on because, like, guys are jumping into this thread. So, then, like, after a bunch of tweets, they're just kind of tweeting past each other.
Yeah.
And I get the sense, and Ted, I think you agree with me, that there is a touch of posturing in this.
So no way.
The tweet is, you know, when the tweet, first tweet is going to be something like, you know, I was reading Bavinck in the original Dutch. I don't know if Bavinck's Dutch. We'll go with it.
Sounds correct.
Yeah. I was reading Bavinck in the Dutch, and just, you know, I found his section on the hypostatic union to be just not quite what I've read in Luther's original German. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think? As if this is a discussion question.
Right.
And then, you know, it's like throwing chum in the water for nerd Twitter, and they're just, and here they go. And they're just devouring Bavinck and Dutch and whatever else.
Yeah, no, that's good. Baby, does that kind of, like, sync with what you've experienced on nerd Twitter?
Yeah, I think it's that. I think it's just like this, it lacks, like, an incredible amount of, like, self-awareness.
Okay.
And what bothers me about that is that not self-awareness in the sense we normally think of it, but in the sense that they actually like being known for people that would go back and forth on something like that. That drives me up the wall.
Isn't Twitter all about self-awareness, though? I mean, isn't it built on a platform of self-awareness?
Or lack thereof.
No, it's self-platforming, not self-awareness. Yeah. They're two very different
things. Yeah, but like your Bavinck quote, it isn't about Bavinck or celebrating Bavinck or even entertaining an audience.
Because you could just do like a group chat if you want.
You could do a group chat if you want to talk about Bavinck.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's about what this says about me primarily. Yeah, and then it's
But there's two emotions that come out. Yeah. There's the emotion of like, dude, this wrecked me this morning. Like, I am so, like,
I'm, man, so this, humbled
this
by
this. This was so beautiful.
Yeah, it was so beautiful. Right.
Or they try to insert like some sense of humor. Like, wasn't it funny how he said this, when we all know that the hypostatic union, you know, that kind of thing. And I feel like to everybody else, you're looking at this just going like I know I like you and I'm supposed to like you, but again, remind me who Bavinck is.
Yeah.
Like, baseline, let's just begin here.
No, yeah.
And I'm being coy, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one. This person may listen. I won't name him, but this is the. I'm just going to grab a tweet out of the middle of a conversation between multiple.
There you go.
And it says simply this: "You're right. It's too early for this. I was just reading an origin screed on the devil, and it influenced me to start a fight."
Well, that
as one does.
Yeah,
before it's early in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, there's almost something kind of. I'm almost like kind of interested in that though.
Well, there's something
getting all into like what devil and your witchcraft. And,
yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just scrolling through certain people's feeds to
And it's always like it's listing like a, you know, like parts of books that like 14 people have read, but like having like
Brett Dill.
Right. Like one of our
different kind of 14 person book. Yeah.
But like acting super hyped.
Yeah.
By describing something that the average person, i.e. me, like would have no idea what they're talking about.
Now, does it I'm going to push you on this a little bit. Does it make you angry because you don't have access to it, or does it make you angry because they're posturing and you're not a part of it? I want to get where the anger comes from, because
the anger is in a, I don't understand people that think it's cool to look smart, because I don't care about ever looking smart.
That's fascinating. No, I would frame my response as a question. What do you care about looking? If not smart, then what?
We talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
Like, my greatest fear is never not looking smart, to which some people would say, don't worry.
Yeah. Don't worry. Not going to be a problem. Yeah,
not a problem. I know. The obvious response to that.
Right.
My biggest fear is being uninteresting and dull.
Yeah.
And boring.
Yeah.
So, like, thinking about, we talked about this earlier about sermons.
Yeah.
So, some guys are afraid that they're going to be called on something. Oh, man, you screwed up the meaning of that word.
Right.
And you end up looking like an idiot because you didn't really know what you were talking about when you, you know, unpack that passage. To me, I'm afraid of the guy in the back that's, like, looking around 4 minutes in going, oh, my gosh, this is incomprehensibly
wrap boring. It up already. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That is my greatest fear. But, again, that's a personality thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one is just as bad as the other.
Yeah.
But it's just me, you know.
Yeah.
Just this episode also brought to you by original Pringles. Bet you can't eat just one. Also, I bet you can hear Ted chewing a lot more than one.
These are delicious.
Great dessert.
It's a delightful snack.
Those are the particle board of chips. They're just like...
I like to wash down my Whataburger with a little Pringles original.
Yeah, it's just the shape of them, I think. You know,
taking care of the bodies, boys.
This is your Happy Rant nutritional guide.
Yes.
Body's a temple, you guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ted, when you speak on the smart to boring fear scale, where do you fall?
I'm probably with Ronald. I would be crushed if anybody thought I was boring.
Yeah.
And
like there's no worse crime than that.
I think about the smartness thing though. Like the way that I deal with that is I try very hard to like stay in my lane. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to tackle you know, the thing that you guys referenced in the nerd tweet.
The hypostatic union.
Hypostatic union. I'm not handling that, you know? So I try to keep it pretty close to the vest in terms of what I know that I can handle.
Oddly, as a pastor, I'm not handling that either.
No.
That's the thing about nerd Twitter.
They are.
They're handling all the things that nobody else is handling. And not because they need handling, but...
Yeah.
Like, the reason nobody else is handling them is because they're like...
They were just born liking things like that.
I'm just trying to get my kids to school here.
Right.
My question to you guys, is this a hobby for them?
Yes.
I mean, is this like tennis for some
people? Most of them are profs too, right? I mean, that's kind of the deal with nerd. Most of these guys are like profs, teachers.
Still a hobby.
Well, you know what I mean. It's like they feel like they're getting paid to like go deep, you know? Yeah. I mean, you could say that about pastoral work. You could say that about your work. I mean,
sure.
You know, you're getting paid to go deep into something that you should know something about. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
But you know, deep is like a matter of,
the difference is people have been paid to go deep on things for centuries, but only within the last 15 years do we have the ability to like posture in a very like ultra public way about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be if you were a theology nerd, you would go deep in your own office. Maybe you'd go deep, like, in the hallway with some other profs.
Or you're teaching students and you're going deep.
Yeah, but there's no way to, like...
Just tell the world...
To do the look, I'm so deep thing.
Other than writing a book.
See, I think I might be... I might have just sort of misunderstood the nerd Twitter in terms of their posturing. Because I would compare them to... my wife has explained this, you know, that like when women get dressed up and done up, they're not doing that to impress men.
Yeah.
They're doing that
to compete with each other.
To compete and or handle the judgment of other women.
Yeah.
Or fascinating.
To impress.
And to feel good about themselves.
Sure, sure.
Theological nerd Twitter is doing the same thing. They are not here for the masses.
It's true.
They are here for one another.
Yeah.
This is their own little like theological catwalk that they're strutting right now.
Right.
To impress one
because
another.
Because the kind of personality that would dive into those things is not like the kind of personality that's concerned about whether other people think they're cool or not boring.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
But I don't know. You know, it's like what you just said about staying in your lane, though, T. I mean, I think there's a lot of merit to that. I think here's the thing. If you're somebody who is a compelling enough speaker and you're not boring, most people will, in a lot of ways, interpret that as being smart at the same
time. Sure. Yeah.
Because there's a smartness about
it. Oh, yeah. Check both boxes.
Look at megachurch pastors everywhere.
Right.
That's true.
Like, they...
If they're good speakers, if they're just kind of...
Or listen to the way that people talk about speakers.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so Rob Bell made a career off of saying stuff that was patently...
Untrue,
nonsensical,
and stupid, and shallow. But dude, if I had a nickel for every Grand Rapids kid who was like, "Oh, Rob Bell is brilliant,"
super compelling communicator, great communicator,
okay. Or even like the word "brilliant" as a smartness thing attached to Rob Bell.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm more comfortable saying he's a compelling communicator than I am saying he's
brilliant.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's but what it goes to show is that being compelling, it's fool's gold. You can make a thing that is utterly meaningless sound super meaningful simply by being like 97% of TED Talks are answering a question nobody asked or talking about something nobody cares about or saying something that doesn't matter or that is untrue because they pose it with these like just these super compelling questions. Have you ever considered? You're like, no, I've right. never considered. Mm-hmm. Also, because you don't need to consider.
Right.
But now they're brilliant because they're compelling.
It's right. all in the manner in which you do something. Because at the end of the day, it's really interesting, right? So the pastors that tend to be, how shall we say it, like a little more dry. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, those are the dudes that end up getting all the questions about the things they were trying to talk about during their sermon. The guys that talk a little faster, insert illustrations, have mm-hmm. a little humor, might be just as theologically accurate, but do it in a way where everybody's just kind of going, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, nobody's questioning anything.
There you go. That's what you want after a sermon.
It's like being, it's the equivalent of on any given Sunday as a speaker.
Yeah, that's right. Get me into that doorway after the sermon.
It's like you might have opinions, but like you're so just like you're so disoriented, you don't even know where to start.
And that's the thing is, if we were going to break down Al Pacino's speech from that like it was a sermon, so we came out and then we're like, man, that was amazing.
Yeah. You
know, he said we're going to die for that itch. This is football. You don't die for a game. This is nonsense. That's preaching in a nutshell for a lot of guys, where it's like you can just get to say off the wall stuff, but if you're like, you say it in such a way that people are blown back in their seats, it works.
And if you're passionate, people, here's, okay, being serious though for a minute. If you exude a certain kind of passion as mm-hmm. a speaker, it kind of pushes people back from wanting to confront you because they're like, dude, he's so passionate.
He's going to fight me on this.
Or just like, dude, I don't know. Maybe he knows something I don't know. Yes. I don't know. Whereas if you're a guy that...
If Pacino had been a dry, deadpan, like, reformed pastor, and he'd put the die for that inch up on an overhead as, like, 5 points.
Right.
Number one.
Like, with, like, a noose.
Right. Number one, I've pissed away everything I've ever had. Number two, this is a hard game. Are you willing to look at the guy next to you?
Yeah, he would set it up. He's like, these are, so this is my context. These are my presuppositions. Mm-hmm. It's kind of our starting point. We're just, you know, get these out there.
Yeah.
This is what we're working with. And then we'll get into where we need to go today with these ideas.
Cap, would you turn to Ephesians 4 for me, please?
turn to the 11th page of the playbook. And then just rip it out because we don't need it. We're fighting for inches today. You know, yards are made of inches, approximately.
Guys,
36.
Here's the context. This is the last game of the season. Yeah. And we have to win it to make the playoffs. So just contextually, that's what's going on.
That's our purpose statement,
But the fact that he raises his voice, he's passionate, against his veins are bulging.
Oh, yeah.
It's like everybody's just like, well, I don't know, we just got to win the game.
Exactly.
I might disagree with half the things he said, but I got to get out there and win.
Yeah, yeah. I hope I don't have to literally...
But you guys get what I'm saying, though? There's so much truth to that as a speaker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, do you guys fall prey to that as a listener? Because, for example, let's go back to football.
Yeah.
I never had a coach give me a speech that made me want to run through a wall.
No, me neither.
The one time our coach got to me was we were just getting absolutely blown out at halftime. And he walks in and he just basically goes, if you don't want to win, go home. Like, we play to win.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay.
I like it.
Very Pacino.
Yeah.
And he wasn't screaming. He was just like, why are you here if you don't want to play to win?
Yeah.
And like that was it. That was the one that got to me because I was like, he posed a question that actually applies to the game.
Mm-hmm.
This is our purpose. Let's go play harder.
Yeah.
You know, all the screaming and yelling. And I was always just like, you sound like a moron.
Yeah, you're logic driven though, Pipe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why.
And so,
you
know. I feel like I'm skeptical of the like fast talking, like compelling speaker because
Same.
The words behind what you're saying are utter tripe. You have not said anything of note yet.
So, Pipe, technically speaking, don't react too quickly. You are going to like a pastor that is a little more slow and methodical.
Not necessarily. I want a pastor who just says stuff that I'm like, it holds up.
But if he's a very passionate individual by nature, that's going to be a slight bit of like,
I have to get past that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm obviously a little spoiled on the preaching front because I grew up with a dad who did not waste a syllable.
Yeah.
And when he considered a text, he considered every letter and punctuation and everything in whatever.
Pipe, like, we know.
Yeah. So there's like, I'm not that. But
who's your dad again?
Rob Bell Sr.
Rob, that's right.
No.
Noel Piper.
Beth Moore.
Yeah.
I bring that to it as well. But yeah, I don't really care how somebody preaches if what they're preaching has... like it holds up. I do sometimes have to get past the like super charismatic speaking to get to the, is there meat on this?
Here's a great example, man. I remember this dude that was he was one of my old lead pastors way back in the day. And this was the weirdest thing. He was at T4G, I think it was, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. I wasn't there. And he texts me in the middle. It's the first T4G he ever went to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you got Chandler, DeYoung, the whole crew. Yeah. And he texts me and he goes, I just heard Kevin DeYoung preach mm-hmm. one of the greatest sermons on whatever it was
yeah.
that I've ever heard in my life.
Mm.
And, you know, I just look yeah. cool. Yeah, no, he's solid, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, Chandler went right after DeYoung.
Channy.
And I mean, there's a pretty marked difference yeah. between Chandler and DeYoung. I mean, no, let's not be funny right now for one
sure,
minute.
Sure.
Like, there's a marked difference in the sense that, man, you know, you're going to have like a 290 page manuscript from DeYoung where he doesn't waste a word.
Yeah.
And Chandler is just kind of stream of consciousness and just kind of vamping and doing his thing.
Kind of interrupts himself.
Yeah. He doesn't finish sentences. And this dude was simultaneously so offended by Chandler.
Why?
He said, What's with all the jokes? What's with the sarcasm? He goes, What's with him yelling at me? He goes, I don't need that right now. That's not what I'm trying to gain
then
from.
Then get up
right
and walk
now.
Out, dude. Nobody's keeping you there.
Right, but that's not the point.
This is what I don't like.
That's not the point.
I know.
The point is two different styles with one dude who would lean a little more nerd Twitter, appreciates DeYoung.
Yeah.
Looks at a guy like Chan because he's so passionate and he's, you know, inserts a little bit of humor at times into his sermons. And he's like, I can't deal.
God forbid we laugh.
Right. I can't deal with that.
There might be a chapter in this book we're writing on humor.
Interesting.
Rumor has it.
Boys, I wonder if we should do that.
Always selling.
You know, just thinking about that. What you said earlier, though, it's not passion that makes me skeptical. Because I don't want a preacher who sounds like they're bored by their own sermon.
Yeah.
Passion is good. It's the polished, perfect, like, patter communication style. Uh-huh. Like, when you have sort of the inspirational speaker meets auctioneer thing going on, I'm like, I do not trust you. If you're doing a lot of the, like, those like sort of offsetting couplets where you're like, not this, but this. Not, and I'm like, that's not logic. You're just
true,
trying
dude.
To rhyme.
It feels too curated.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but I love
that's,
how you just
that's
did
not
that.
A race problem. That's a grace problem. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
I think it's why.
It's not a skin problem. It's a sin problem.
Oh, yeah.
Shut up. Uh-huh. Like, say stuff that means something.
It's why we sometimes resonate with nerds, because by being so just manifestly unentertaining and boring, we equate that with sincerity.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, like, at least they're not putting on a show or trying to make me feel whatever.
It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, you can say things in a really compelling way, thoughtfully and with meaning.
Yeah.
It is hard. It takes more work because you have to, like, believe it and have put in the work to prepare a well-crafted message.
Yeah.
And I feel like we get people who put in the work to get a message full of meaning, and we get people who have worked on their communication skills. It's the combination
it's
of the
balance,
two that matters.
It's a balance, I know. It's hard to get the balance.
And most, I feel like there's a lot of preachers who do well, and they you know, they'll tilt a little bit one way or the other. But yeah, I definitely lean more towards say stuff that matters, and then work on your communication.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. My brother,
stuff that matters.
My little brother was like this dude where he was like, I'm not exaggerating this. He'd go to these churches where he goes, man, I finally found a guy that is just slow, monotone, and just preaches, unpacks.
That's where he was at.
I don't even want the guy to raise his voice.
Interesting.
I barely want the guy to say hello, lest he tries to say it in kind of a funny way.
Yeah, right.
Lest he says something like, hey.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, hey, guys.
Yeah.
Right?
And what are you trying to be, my friend?
So this is a guy, this is a dude, my bro, that loves the driest, just stick to the word.
See, preacher. Now, how would he feel about nerd Twitter, though? Because...
Oh, I know. That wouldn't even be a thing for him.
Because those guys are boring, but there's a... It smacks of insincerity, too.
What's...
Well, no. So if he said, he has to be able to understand it, though, too.
Yeah.
So it has to be understood. So if they're trying to use clever words and theology, he'd just be like, oh, no.
Well,
no,
that's boring. Nerd Twitter is boring in the same way that, like, listening to two astrophysicists talk about their work is boring. You're like, whatever.
Or Nerd Twitter is boring in the same way that, like, listening to two CrossFit guys talk about their workout is boring. It's a flex.
Yeah.
They want you to be impressed. Whatever. We're impressed.
I think I'm just offended that they think that would be impressive. That's what drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Is that they think that level of nerdology would be impressive to somebody other than themselves.
Right.
That drives me crazy.
Ted and I are both sports nerds to a degree. We're not maximum sports nerds, but we're pretty nerdy. Especially about
probably shouldn't self-diagnose that pipe, but carry on.
Well, no, trust me. I listen to some nerd podcasts and I'm like, thank God I'm not like them. I'm a little pharisaical about this.
Uh-huh.
But neither of us are under any delusions that dropping our nerd knowledge of sports on Twitter is going to make people impressed with us.
That's true.
It's, and I don't think either of us would thrive on the, well, actually, from other sports nerds. You know, like, wow, you miscalculated that statistic. Or like, oh, you misremembered that guy's jersey number from 1992. Like, none of that is fun. Mm-hmm. What's fun is the enjoyment of it. Like, a conversation where we're like, oh, I remember that guy with the neck roll and whatever. Mm-hmm. So there's a place for that as a, like, enjoyable hobby. But, well, yeah, when you're trying to, like, when there's a posturing aspect to it, you're like, oh, you think that's cute, don't
Sweetie.
You? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there it is, boys. We just aw-sweeted nerd Twitter.
Bless their hearts.
Yeah, bless their hearts.
No,
we're not blessing their hearts?
I don't want to bless
their
hearts. Yes. Yeah,
I'm not blessing their tweets, just their hearts.
Yeah, I've not progressed in sanctification towards nerd Twitter.
If nerd Twitter
are we talking about like progressive sanctification? Is that like progressive covenantalism? What are we talking about here?
I literally don't know what that means.
If nerd Twitter didn't exist.
I got an MA, not an MDiv, so carry on.
That's right. Me either. Soon to be a DMA.
There you go.
What would these guys be doing?
If what?
If nerd Twitter wasn't a thing. Like, if they weren't spending hours on it every
waiting
day.
They'd be writing white papers.
Waiting for the next ETS.
Yeah.
The ETS is just, it's like a nerd Twitter meetup.
Oh, interesting.
Except they just read their strings of tweets and call them papers. And then they all either congratulate each other or tell each other why they're wrong. While wearing blazers and khakis.
I mean, honestly, man, that's why, again, nothing against him because we love him, but that's why KDI makes such a play in this tribe is because of nerd Twitter, because of ETS.
KDY is like a nerd Twitter guy, but he can communicate at a fairly high level.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I actually think he's a little more compelling as a speaker than like your typical nerd Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitterer.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, he connects truth to real life.
He does.
That's right.
Because he's a pastor.
Yeah, he's practicing.
Whereas a lot of nerd Twitter is like just living at a level that nobody can be discipled. It's not just that they're not trying to or whatever. It's that nobody could be. Mm. It's a foreign language. Like, there is no translation of that stuff into, like, you know, retail bankers, you know, vernacular.
Right. Yeah.
Ah, the old retail banker.
God bless him, you know?
Always comes back to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or her.
Yeah.
He's like, he's like my paradigm of like, this is the person I'm trying to communicate to.
It's like retail banker. Seminary. Yeah, how are you going to reach the retail banker?
By the way, are there such a thing anymore?
Like 59 grand a year with decent benefits, goes to work every day in like the blue shirt and the tie with the black, like the same thing. And he's kind of generally fine.
Yeah.
Not an uneducated dude, but not brilliant. Yeah. And his hobbies are like watching sports and hanging out with friends. If you can communicate truth to that guy, he's not lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
He's not brilliant. You're doing okay. Mm.
Wasn't the guy in that Christmas movie that everybody likes, It's a Wonderful Life, wasn't he a retail banker?
Basically.
I hate that movie too.
It's so bad.
Yeah. I'm not trying to bring it up. I'm just making the point.
Ray Ortland is one of the men in the world that I respect most, and he listed it as his first favorite movie.
Judas.
And I was really grateful that in Christ we can still be unified, because that is an incomprehensibly difficult thing for me to stomach.
Yeah, no doubt, dude.
Oh, that movie's so bad.
Yeah. What else is on the list there, Pipe?
I mean, as long as we're talking about ETS, we could talk about Ronnie's just lasting, nagging question of why is it that these gentlemen feel the need to be in blue blazers and khakis? Like, why is that the uniform? You phrased the question in, like, from your heart, Ronald.
Yeah.
I feel like you have.
Well, I mean, we talked about this a couple years ago, and so we can answer the question in all these technical ways. Well, you got to understand, it's the kind of school they're going into. It's what they came out of. It's what it's, you know, how they've been conditioned growing up and thinking, like, what accounts for, you know, something that is being taken seriously on an academic level. They got to have like their uniform has to follow kind of like the perception on the, all of that. I get all of that. What I want to know is how people like that wake up in the morning, and it's not a character judgment on them at all. Nope. It's just simply saying, understanding what's in the mind of somebody who looks out on a sea of khakis and blue sport jackets and says, I've got to wear khakis and blue sport jackets. I just literally don't get it.
I more and more I've come to think of it as a team. It's a team uniform.
Mm-hmm. See, the thing is, guys, that actually makes sense to me. I didn't grow up playing team sports, so I don't like the herd mentality.
So maybe, but you grew up watching the Dodgers.
Right.
And you probably grew up dreaming of being the Penguin,
I raced motorcycles, so it was individual sports. So
I know, but
everybody had their own thing.
Yeah. And I'm thinking more fandom than even being like, this is like the
But I understand what you're saying to you.
So a lot of those guys, I think they would be like the super fan who refers to the team as we, you know? Uh-huh. The team signs a player, and they're like, oh, sweet, we signed so-and-so, as if their life got measurably better because that team signed it. So, like, they're wearing the jersey. They've probably got the logo, like, tattooed on their shoulder blade, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And I think there's an element of that just at the very subdued level where, like, this is to be part of this community, this family, this thing. Mm-hmm. This is my uniform. The difference is that you actually can be on the team in that. Like, you can, like, you can elbow your way into the nerd tweeter, you know, Twitter wars and tweeting at people, and you can maybe get a paper read at ETS and whatever. Like, so there's, I think it's a team uniform vibe.
No, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, it's unarguable. You know, it's definitely like a team uniform vibe, but like, why? Okay, let's break it down very simply. Why is it blue and khaki? Like, what if you went in there with, like, black and, like...
It wouldn't work.
Blue. I'm not trying to be funny right now.
No.
Yeah. Why is it blue?
Everybody knows black and blue don't go together.
I mean, I'm not trying to be literal, but why is it blue and why is it khaki? And the multicolored tie.
There's a reason for that as well. And it's because it's the next step. So, like, you go to something like ETS. This is the quintessential khaki and blue blazer crowd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, the seminary heads... The higher ups,
they're
suits.
Yeah, they're suited up.
So that's their uniform. That's like the.
I understand, you know, the suit is the uniform.
Think like military. Like, that's like the captain's bar.
If you work at a corporation,
the
CEO versus retail banker.
So then this is like when they level up, they get to wear suits.
When
so
you're in the khakis, you're a foot soldier. You're
in the infantry's uniform.
So I don't think you guys know the answer to this, but I'm going to listen.
I think we're getting. Getting to it.
It's, yeah. So for that crowd, the suit is a special occasion. It's like weddings, funerals, or like
I'm not debating the suit. If you work at a corporation, you wear a suit every day.
Sure.
But when you are the occasion they are dressing for, which is like team activity,
sitting and listening to a talk.
The uniform is this, because it's the level down, but it's not casual. Like, you don't show up in your polo shirt tucked into khakis.
Too casual.
That's inappropriate for this.
But you're being slightly funny, because if you go to ETS, nobody is requiring you to wear blue and khaki.
No.
So that you can wear whatever wear a suit.
I'm going
to
explain.
Be taken seriously. But why do they fall into, I have to look exactly like that guy. I got to be color coordinated with him.
I think there's a symbolic.
And does it come from academia? With the little insignia?
I think it does.
Nah, the little crest. They don't, most of them don't have that. Maybe a lapel pin. It's just. Please, they got this like off the rack at TJ Maxx.
Well, no, I guess what I think it says.
And I get that too.
And they got it two sizes too big too.
Correct.
Just saying something for
sure. Here's what I think it says.
Correct.
Khaki is the color of non-offense. It's the most forgettable color there is. It says, I'm approachable. I'm a man of the people. But then if you raise the eye, right? My eyes are up here.
And you do.
And you do. Then you got the little regimental bow tie with the stripes. You got the blue blazer that says, hey, I'm an academic. I take this stuff seriously.
I'm a man of substance.
Right? Yeah, is it a signifier? That's what I'm saying. So here's a real question. So when somebody wears the blue, the khaki, the multicolored, or the bow, does it tell everybody, like, whatever, man, I got a PhD, or like, I come from that world?
It's not that rigid. It's
an indicator?
It's not like the robes.
There's another practical aspect to this.
I'm not saying.
There's another practical aspect to this, and that is that the majority of academics can't dress themselves.
That's true, too.
That is so true.
So that's
true.
There's a lot of, like color by numbers here. So, khaki and blue, like, whoever has taught them how to put on their clothes in the morning has been, like, khaki and blue go together. The suit goes with the suit. Or you can do, like, jeans and polos.
Yeah.
Those are your options. Because if they try to do anything outside of that, they're going to end up with, like, dress socks up to their calf and cargo shorts. And like a long sleeve button down. Yeah, Chacos. Like this is where they're ending up.
That's
what happens when ETS is in San Diego.
I guess. I think it's just anytime you're operating, you're observing something outside of your own culture.
Sure.
you look at it and you're, I'm always trying to look like, what are the rules of that particular, you know, environment? And so to me, it's so interesting that there are these unwritten that don't have to be followed rules that these, all these dudes seem to abide by, which is so fascinating.
Well, let me frame it to you this way.
Yeah.
Why do all the harbor guys wear dark wash jeans, work boots, and heavy flannels, even though it's 104 out in Naples?
Well, okay, so that, well, they don't. But, like, that would be the case. So if everybody wore
this, they do in Louisville.
If everybody wore the same brand jeans, the same flannel,
right,
the same brand boots, and the same jacket, which they don't, then you can make a case for it.
They kind of do, though, because it's the aesthetic of the company. You know what I mean?
Stylistically, sure.
Stylistically.
Well, and they actually all don't.
So there's, what's interesting about ETS is that you get guys who are like, you get like the dumpiest of the dumpy, and like none of their clothes fit, and their khakis are like piled up on their shoes and whatever. Then you get guys where like everything is crisp and fitting. Yeah, you got the European cut, everything.
Yeah,
same uniform.
Yeah.
And
that's the difference between, though, like if we're football players on the same team, I've got gloves and a visor, and my fit is like, you know, I'm rolling the cuff of my pant leg a little bit to look faster. Whereas you're just going out there in like non-tapered sleeves, no gloves. We're wearing the same uniform.
Yeah.
But we're wearing it very different.
Yeah. So even within that, there can be a sense of style, but which means that it is not just a color. It's not just a color by numbers. There is also like, this is an active choice. This is how I'm going to dress sharp.
It's an active choice. Yeah. That's what I keep getting back to.
Not for all of them, but for some of them.
I think something you said rings true though, which is like for the academic, there's a sense of, I want to convey that I'm so wrapped up in thinking about the minutiae of my field that I can't be bothered with clothing. Like, I have colleagues at my school.
Yeah, do they dress like that?
They dress like that. But then I have colleagues even in other departments that wear literally the same thing every day.
Yeah.
Like, the same outfit. It's like they got a closet full of it because they don't want to be bothered.
They like to not have to choose.
Well, that has sort of been like culturally accepted as the genius way. Like,
this is a genius
way.
If
you think that Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg, whoever are geniuses, you do that because that's what they did.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs was all black mock turtlenecks and all like mid blue wash Levi jeans and white sneakers.
Yeah.
Zuckerberg is black t-shirt and jeans and all the same brand, so he never has to think about it.
Right.
So there's something to that.
There's another psychology going on behind that. Yeah. But like, so you unpack it a little bit,
sure,
T, because we always forget you're in academia.
Right.
But
sometimes I forget.
But dude, listen, you can wear whatever you want. Is that correct?
Yes.
Within parameters.
Really, not even within parameters.
You're wearing shorts and a hoodie right now. Can you wear that to class?
Dude.
Or would you just wear pants instead but wear the hoodie?
I'd wear pants and the hoodie sometimes.
You would?
Yeah, and I've done that.
Okay.
I think if I were to do it, if I were to wear like this for an extended period of time, somebody might say something.
Okay.
But like I have days where I go right from a class to like the football field at Lane, and sometimes I'll just wear like the swag that I wear in the football field, just because I don't want to do the wardrobe change in between.
Now, obviously, you have colleagues that would never in 2,517 years ever wear that, right?
Yes.
They're wearing the khakis and the blue.
Yeah.
So how – okay. So there's a different sense of like there's a different psychology going on there.
Some of this is comfort level. Like my dad will never dress the same way I do. Like I'm wearing actually the exact same hoodie as Ted right now in jeans and a baseball cap. My dad will never dress like this.
Yeah.
He just won't.
Dude, he wouldn't cut the grass in that.
No.
Yeah.
So
I don't really buy into the comfort level because there's a reason why those khaki blues are not putting that out.
Well, no, the khaki blue thing is like so consistent, it's different. But I just mean like the reason that a lot of people like my dad does not know how to like dress down. Like his dress down is jeans with a tucked in button down.
Dude, I'll unpack it for you a little bit. And I don't think there's a right or wrong here. I think for the khaki.
No, there's no right or wrong. We're not talking about morality.
For the khaki and blue guys, though, I think that outfit signifies a baseline level of seriousness and respect.
Yes.
For the office of professor, the academy, whatever. And as much as I love my job, and I do, I love my job, I love my school, I have no such respect. Like, I have no reverence for the academy or for the classroom. I mean, which is why I'll wear whatever I want in it. And I'm still going to teach well. I'm still going to do a good job, whether I'm wearing a Lane football sweatshirt or a suit.
How do they perceive you, would you say?
Oh, I think they judge the H out of me. I know they do.
For real?
Yeah, I just don't care. Yeah.
Man, yeah, they judge the hat right out of you.
Dude, they do. Yeah. I mean, I know they get off the elevator and they're like, man.
Do they even know you're a prof? Would they even know. Like? Would some of them be like, "Oh, he's a
some
student.
Of them do.
He's no. like an old student.
He's an old student. He's a non-traditional." Yeah. No, they know I'm a prof. I've been around for 6 years, so there's definitely like.
But has there ever been? Hold on. I'm gonna keep unpacking.
No.
Now, when you guys are in, like, all the teachers are in, all the profs.
Dude, we literally share a floor with the Bible guys.
So
the khaki and blue army is like right on the other end of the hallway.
Yeah. Please, you cannot tell me that. Not once in 6 years have they ever asked, like, "Man, you sure dress casual." Like, man, that's cool. You get away with that,
baby.
Whatever
kind of
lines they're throwing at you, right?
We're in the Mid-South, and we're at a kind of Southern Baptist environment where, like, stuff isn't dealt with directly. Everything's indirect.
So they're thinking it. They're thinking it 100%.
Oh, they're thinking it 100%.
They've written a white paper on it. They've thought about it.
Yeah.
No, if the South had used passive aggression in the Civil War, they would have won. They are masters at passive aggression.
Dude, they are. But there's no directness down there.
No.
Like, nobody's ever going to say, "Dude, wow, why don't you dress like a grown up? You know, have some respect for this place." And you know what? I probably would. If somebody was that direct with me, and if it was somebody I respected, if they were like, "Dude, I don't mean to be an a-hole, but, like, I don't know, just we're trying to level up our whole, you know, approach to the academy or whatever. Can you just wear
just tuck your shirt in or whatever,
slacks and a button-down shirt?" And I'd be like, "Great, done." You know, but I don't know.
They don't. So it's more of like a it's a personal it's like a personal decision based on the way you want others to perceive you, and that's just not a thing for you.
Right.
Or it is a thing for you. You like that perception
in that environment for the khaki blazer crowd. There's like a perceived peer pressure,
right?
And so among some of them, it probably doesn't exist. Like, they're probably not paying attention to what anybody else wears.
Yeah.
But they believe that everybody's paying attention to what they wear.
Yeah.
And so in our department, I gotta fit this.
Like, I'm in communication. It just doesn't matter. Like, nobody's perceiving.
Makes sense. Do you think you'd have more pressure in another department?
Oh, 100%, dude. If I was in Bible, for sure there would be the pressure. But even in English, there would be a sense of, you know, you gotta pull off that professorial kind of
look. Do other people in your department dress that down? Dress as down as you? Oh, they do. Okay,
and then
so you're not alone. You're not
no,
alone.
No.
You're
my
not
department.
Like, you're not like the oddball.
My department's cash, man.
Okay,
real cash.
And it's kind of it's kind of like an unwritten rule that, like, it's allowed to be.
But it's not even like genius cash. So you go into, like, the sciences and you get the shambling, like, "Yeah, I'm so busy being brilliant. All I can manage is this, you know, drab."
Yeah, it's a miracle I have my pants on.
It's a miracle I have my pants on. I zip my fly up. You know, I'm so busy thinking about fine particle physics. I can't be bothered with.
Would you say it's kind of like this? Can I compare it with this?
Yeah.
If you're at a more traditional church, the pastor, I'm not saying he gets all crazy, but he maybe just wears like a button down and a jacket.
Sure.
Maybe some slacks. But there's no expectation that the worship guy has to dress that way. Even though the church, all the staff is tucking their shirts in.
Worship guy slacks. Gets a little exemption.
He's allowed to have. Is that? Are you basically the worship guy?
I'm the worship guy. Yeah, I'm the worship guy. Yep.
The worship guy at Union, ladies
yeah,
and gentlemen.
That's it. Yeah.
Ted W. Clark.
Ted the worship guy.
Yeah.
What is your middle name?
Arnold.
Oh, Ted A. Clark.
Yeah. My grandpa's name.
Tack.
Is there? Are you Theodore?
No, just Ted.
Just Ted? Okay. Yeah. I think I've asked you that before, but, like, just curious.
Yeah.
Theodore Arnold Cluck is a...
Yeah, that'd be
you should be quite
a solid. Yeah. Yeah, I should.
I mean, that...
Get my doctorate.
I mean, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baby, after you get the doctorate, is your aesthetic going to change at all?
I mean, that's...
Are we going to get you in a little blazer?
That's the funniest thing ever.
What kind of a photo shoot would it be? Khakis and a... Baby, there's a Marshalls down the street. And I know you saw it because we both thought of Jared as we drove by it. But, like... We could get your boy on FaceTime, and we could make a little run to Marshall's, get you some khakis.
The thing is with Jared C., is he sort of adamant anti, like, blue suit jacket khakis guy.
Yeah. The thing I love about Jared C., having never
met him. He's
also,
like, pro-cargo shorts, so.
Well, we're working
on it. He seems very populist, very man of the people.
Yeah, he is. He definitely populist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's no
There's no putting on airs.
There's no need to iron my shirt.
That's right.
Like, who does that?
Yeah.
Not you.
Don't look at the chicken grease stain. My eyes are up here.
Right, exactly.
You shallows.
Kind of trailed off there, Ted.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I forgot about Jared C., who he gets away
with
not wearing the uniform. So whenever he's standing in a line
with
all those dudes wearing the uniform, it's always like, "Oh, wow, look."
But he's man of the people guy. Yeah. And you see, none of those nerd Twitter guys are hanging their hat on being man of the people. In fact, their whole persona is about being, "I'm not a man.
Man above the people.
Man above the people.
Yeah.
The people look to me for wisdom."
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
See?
The people for the people.
Yeah. Now, how do you deal with one of those denoms, baby, where you're in the robes and the vestments? And,
Not that I'm saying
that's a better way of doing church.
Not that what we're doing is wrong.
Not that what you're doing is wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not saying that other than...
In that it's irreverent and shallow, you know...
I mean, like what I'm doing is not that it's wrong, but it is irreverent and
shallow and an inch deep.
And it's called low church for a reason.
Yeah, it is.
How low is your church in the pantheon?
Not like low can your low church go? Not like gentle and lowly, but like bottom of the barrels. Really
gentle and low church. That's going to be the book that we write. The cover's just going to be a drop ceiling and some fluorescent lights.
Grace to you.
Gentle and low.
And a crock pot of Swedish meatballs in the corner. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, dude, that's so funny.
Do you think low church is going to come back? Is it going to make a little resurgence?
Low church is the new high church. Not that there's anything wrong with high church.
No. Right. But like for our kids' age, having done the kind of like... Yeah. High church, the 2-hour sermon.
Our kids are going to be. It's going to be like submerged church. It's going to be so low.
Submergent church. Right. All the churches are going to be basements. Actually,
it's going to be like it's weird. You guys actually wore clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
Submergent church.
We wear our pajamas. Oh, the sermon's 17 minutes long.
Yeah.
10 minutes of that is watching cartoons.
That's a long
one. You know?
17 minutes. You went a little lengthy today, Pastor.
Communion is like cereal and juice.
You're just describing it going back to children's ministry. Yeah. How long is this pod been?
It's a double feature at this point.
Oh, Judas Priest.
It's longer than any given Sunday.
Oh, dude.
It's like
and probably is disorienting, let's be honest.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we were strongly influenced by that.
We were.
Yeah. We need to edit our own podcast, I need to draw this episode to a close.
We have wandered to and fro and fro and to and back again.
So. We really have.
Hither and yon.
Special thanks to Whataburger and Heinz.
And Pringles.
For making the show possible today, really.
Yeah, really.
And to Mary Virginia Norris for donating this wonderful...
Yes, thank you, Mary.
MVN, shout out to
MVN. Is the MVP.
MVN is the MVP, as we said before.
Yes.
Who would MVN be in any given Sunday? Would she be Willie?
MVN? Oh, no. I think she would be... she'd be Cameron Diaz's, like mom. Just, like,
dude, steady, she was a champ,
solid.
Wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked her.
Yeah, absolutely. And Margaret.
And likable throughout.
Yeah, likable throughout.
Just, like, there being...
Kind of the conscience of the movie, if you will.
The conscience of the movie.
Yeah.
The conscience of the sharks.
Yeah, conscience of the sharks. Boys, we've done what we always do. In that we've done the move, and we've won
and the move
on an audio medium.
On an audio medium.
Yeah.
Which means nothing.
Breaking new ground. Yeah. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
The love of God is immeasurable. It's unchanging. It's indescribable. Because God loves you so much, you can sleep through the night in peace. With Abide Bible Sleep Meditation, you can fall asleep fast with relaxing sleep stories based on Scripture. To start listening now, go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Bible Sleep Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.